all across America and around the world. This is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Jim Fossone.
And good afternoon, Veterans Radio listeners. We've got a great program for you today. We're going to talk to three incredible women pilots, two that are currently active in their service and another who's been out for quite a while, but has moved on to be a leadership and management consultant. Sitting in the co-pilot chair with me is Dale Thronberry. Dale, how are you this afternoon?
I am terrific and wonderful, and it's great to be here, Jim, and to talk to these pilots. I love talking to pilots as a pilot myself.
I know you do.
And it's going to be exciting to talk with them. I'm interested in hearing their tales of excitement.
Well, let's start, as we always do, with some upcoming announcements. I'm going to give you this one to everybody a couple of times, so grab your pen and piece of paper. We want you to call into Veterans Radio to tell us what Veterans Day means to you. We're asking that you leave your name, rank, home state, and a little message on what Veterans Day means to you. We'll put a montage together to play those clips on air. The phone number is 248-380-0000, extension 2222. So I'll give that to you again at the end of the announcements here so that you can write it down. And we'd also remind you to get out to vote. We're sneaking up on an election day, so make sure you do that. And let me toss it over to you, Dale. I think you've got a couple to pass along.
I do. And one of our things here on Veterans Radio is that we always encourage the people to vote. We don't care who you vote for as long as you vote. And get out there and let people know how you feel about things. If you're not happy with what's going on, if you don't vote, you can't complain. So, speaking of, that's, you know, and the other thing is we got to make sure our politicians, we want to hold their feet to the fire, make sure they keep their promises about what they're going to do for veterans or what they say they're going to do. Let's make sure we can keep that going. As Jim mentioned, there are a lot of events coming up. Of course, next week is our anniversary program. It's going to be 11 years that we've been on broadcasting Veterans Radio on various stations around the Ann Arbor area. So we encourage you to call the number that Jim gave, and we'll give that again. Leave your thoughts about Veterans Day. And we also want you to call into the program or send us an email about what you think about Veterans Radio, and we'll, after we clean it all up, we'll put you on the air possibly, and we've got a lot of people that we've got scheduled to be on the program next week. Coming up on Saturday, November 8th at the Ward Church is their annual military appreciation breakfast. This is Saturday, November 8th at 8:30. Doors open at 8 o'clock. Their speaker is going to be a Veterans Radio friend of ours, Teresa Irish. She has written a book entitled A Thousand Letters Home. She found all of the letters that her dad had written to her mom during World War II and made a book of it called A Thousand Letters Home. Tickets are $8. Make sure that you can, everybody's welcome. All military will be honored. All you've got to do is to go online at wardchurch.org/military-breakfast. That's next Saturday, November 8th at 8:30, and the Ward Church is at 40,000 6 Mile Road, Northville, Michigan. That's one.
That's excellent. And you've got another?
I got lots.
I know.
It's really a big week. Veterans Day week is very busy in our local area and around the country. So let me remind you, if you do have an event that's going on, please contact us here at Veterans Radio. We'll get it out on the air. You know, our program is not just in Southeast Michigan. It goes all over the world. And, in fact, I think we have an announcement for California here in a moment. But, again, locally at Concordia University here in Ann Arbor, a Veterans Day ceremony is beginning at 9 a.m. with a welcome to veterans and guests at the campus. There's going to be a dedication with band, choir, organs. There's going to be a lunch, helicopter demonstration by the Coast Guard is going to be there. There's going to be seminars all afternoon. There's going to be a packing party to send gifts overseas, and honorary veteran stars and names will be read on the lawn at Concordia University. And you can find out more information by going to their website, which is cuaa.edu/Veterans Day. And I've been to this is the 7th annual Veterans Day celebration, and it's really a great, it's a great presentation, and if you are a veteran and you want to feel good about what you did, this is the place to go. Concordia University, Ann Arbor, next, on Veterans Day.
Now, you happen to be wearing the sweatshirt for the upcoming one. At you have your Michigan sweatshirt on, so go ahead and tell us about the one at the University of Michigan.
Okay, and we also won a football game, so everybody's really in shock. actually, the veterans at University of Michigan is sponsoring an entire week of presentations and programs called Veterans Weeks 2014. It starts off with the Marine Corps birthday run on Wednesday, November 5th. And that's they've got other events through Friday talking about those things. They've got the Army-Navy wheelchair basketball game on Sunday, November 9th at 6:30 p.m. Maybe we can make an appearance at that one. That'd be kind of cool, I think. They've got events on November 10th starting on Monday. It's their Boots art display. They've got Mike Landry is giving a Vietnam lecture on Monday. Veterans Day itself is just full of events all day long, starting with the flag raising and taking the flag down at Central Campus at the main diag and flagpole in the main diag. They're going to be at the Ann Arbor VA. Whew, their speaker is going to be Vice Admiral James Houck. It's national security in today's militaries and their veterans. On Wednesday, there's a World War II veterans panel that will be talking. The student veterans will have a discussion group going on. There's going to be visible and invisible ruins of war. There's a lot of things here. On Thursday, I'm going
to
be a member.
This is the one we've been trying to get down to. Who's doing it on Thursday?
This is me. The Vietnam Veterans Panel is going to be on Thursday at 10 a.m., and I'll be a participant on that panel group. And even better, since this is Ann Arbor, those of you who live here know about this one. What about the students during the Vietnam War? So they're going to have a panel discussion at 1 o'clock at the Michigan Union, University of Michigan, during the Vietnam War. This should be pretty exciting. The turnabout's fair play. And finally, on Friday, there's a discussion group on the Korean War. They are looking for World War II and Korean veterans. So if you want to find out more information, go to their website, which is vets.umich.edu. That's vets.umich.edu. It's going to be an action-packed week at the University of Michigan.
And while you catch your breath, I'll give that call-in number, and you can look at the California one you wanted to do. The call-in number to tell us what Veterans Day means to you is 248-380-0000, extension 2222. And finally...
I got it. You know, we mentioned that we want to talk about events. Well, we've got another event that's coming up over Veterans Day week. And this is from Los Angeles. It's called, I wanted to reach out about National Hunger and Homeless Week at the Midnight Mission, who is in their 100th year of service to the community in Los Angeles, California. And they are going to have events throughout the week, beginning with, Veterans Day observance on Tuesday, of course, with an opening ceremony. Presentation of the colors by Los Angeles High School Color Guard, testimonials from veterans, Medal of Honor recognitions, moment of silence. The afternoon is even going to be a variety show. They're going to have a veteran stand down on November 14th. This is where veterans can, homeless veterans, especially and their families, provide one-stop location to connect them with a broad range of benefits and services available from dental care to Social Security, recovery groups, all in the Los Angeles area. And then finally, they're going to have a fundraiser called Night Without Shelter, Saturday, November 15th. This is a great opportunity for those of you out on the West Coast to help out the veterans out there in Los Angeles. So this is the National Hunger and Homeless Week at the Midnight Mission. So if you look that up on the Internet, I think you'll probably have a great time.
Well,
thanks.
That's great. Again, we'll conclude our various announcements as we always do. We'll be going to a commercial break, and when we come back, we'll join our two Air Force pilots to hear about their careers flying for the country.
Schoolcraft College is proud to have served the communities of Southeast Michigan for 5 decades. So it should come as no surprise that they're just as committed to serving those who have served our country. Schoolcraft College Veteran Services provides assistance to veterans using their educational benefits. They help with the VA benefits application process, provide academic advising, and plan programs of study according to VA guidelines. Classes are forming now in Livonia and Garden City. Visit schoolcraft.edu for more information.
And welcome back to Veterans Radio. We want to introduce to our listeners Major Michelle Rule and Captain Christian Mastracchio. Michelle, are you there?
I'm here, Jim. Hello.
Excellent. And Kristen, are you there?
Yes, thanks for having me.
We're great to have both of you. Now, I know putting the logistics of this together was a little challenging. Major, where are you? Where is there?
I just landed in California, but yes, I did start in Bali, Indonesia, Hong Kong, L.A. last night, and now I'm in Sacramento.
You may win the long distance award. Captain, where are you?
Minot Air Force Base, North Dakota. I've been chosen to be frozen up here.
And the whole Bali thing at the moment seems just not fair, doesn't it? Well, let me set this up, and we have want to get across to our listeners a little bit about your careers. Major Rule has a BS in English from the United States Air Force Academy, and she has two master's degrees, one in psychology and one in English teaching and writing. Kristen Mastracchio is also a United States Air Force Academy grad and went on and did master's work at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, picking up a master's in science and engineering systems. Kristen, I believe your undergraduate is in, some rocket science thing. these are two pretty smart cookies, is what I've concluded, Dale. I know you're right up there with them, Dale.
Oh, I obviously I am.
Yes.
I understand that. All the things that they're going to talk about, I know pretty much verbatim.
Yeah, this is why you flew helicopters.
That's very true. That we only had, we had a compass in it, and that was it. As long as it was running, we felt it was okay.
So what I'm interested in hearing about, and let's start with this. Michelle, how did you decide to go to the academy, and what flamed the desire to fly?
Well, I'd have to give the credit back to my grandfather. He flew B-24s back in World War II. And when I was really little, he lived in Allen Park, Michigan, and he'd put me on his lap, and he'd open up airplane books, and we'd go page by page, and he'd quiz me on what things were, and I just kind of grew up with it and the desire to fly. And then I found out how much money it cost. So it turns out the Air Force Academy will fund your education, and it gives you a pretty good chance of getting a pilot slot.
Excellent. Kristen, how did you develop the desire to fly and go to the academy?
My inspiration came from just growing up in Houston, Texas, right by NASA, going to air shows with my family. And my dad encouraged me to do what I'm passionate about, something I would pay to do instead of getting paid to do it. I said, the only thing I would pay to do is fly in space. So right then I knew I needed to pursue a career in space and aviation. And many parents in our community were astronauts and pilots, so it seemed like an attainable occupation. And my brother was in Air Force ROTC at Texas A&M University. We had cadets from the Drum and Bugle Corps come stay with our family one time. So I had a lot of just ways to know. And then my advisor at MIT, Dr. Misty Cummings, was one of our nation's first female F-18 pilots. So I just decided, yeah, I want to go to pilot training. But it really was that I wanted to do something big after high school. I hadn't even decided to become a pilot. I just wanted to have a grand adventure, and I knew I wanted to be an astro engineer and a collegiate cheerleader, and I always had a heart to serve. The Air Force Academy was the only place that had all those things.
Just so that the two of you can figure out when you passed through the Air Force Academy, when did you graduate, Michelle?
I was class of 2003.
And Kristen, when did you graduate?
2008.
Okay. So one of the things I think I hear in both of your stories, and maybe you'd each comment on, is while you had these big dreams, people actually encouraged you to reach those goals. Is that true?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yes. I think we both give credit for our dads. Again, this is a major role, but my father personally never, ever flinched when I said I wanted to be a circus performer, and he said, okay. When I said I wanted to be an actor on Broadway, he said, okay. And then finally when I said, oh, no, I think I actually want to fly planes for the Air Force, he said, absolutely, what can I do to support you? And he helped me fill out the applications and put me out there and stood behind me even in those days during basic training when it really, really is not fun. Yeah, my dad said he wanted to be the shoulders that I stood on to do something great, have a grand adventure.
So, Dale, I think one of the reasons we tell these stories is we want veterans and their friends who are out there to hear what it takes to inspire the next round of leaders in our military. And I think we've just heard a little bit about that. And hopefully the dads and granddads who are listening take this to heart.
Well, I think that's probably changed now. It's the mothers and the grandmothers who can tell their stories and say, sure, follow in my own footsteps. And
absolutely.
Be whatever you want to be. It's always great to hear the, you know, the dads encouraging their sons and daughters to be what they want to be, especially a circus performer.
So let me ask each of you to talk a little bit. Major, I'll start with you. Would you talk a little bit about the airframes that you currently fly and are rated to fly?
Absolutely. I started off flying the C-130, an old E model. So it was one of the earlier models. So it was what we call steam gauges. It didn't have the glass cockpit. So I flew out of Dyess Air Force Base in Texas. And then I had the chance to go to AFIT, which is a training program to get your master's degree and go teach at the Air Force Academy. So while I was teaching English at the Academy, I realized I missed flying. And I volunteered for a new program. It's called the MC-12. And the Air Force bought a bunch of King Airs off of the private line from doctors and lawyers. And they tore out the insides, all the nice cushy seats. They put in high-tech cameras. And we are supplied to work with the Army for several different missions where we give reconnaissance and intelligence. So I switched over to the MC-12 and just got done with a second deployment in Afghanistan. So that's why I was taking some time off in Bali.
And what's the purpose of the MC-12?
Well, let's see. What can I actually tell you? It's a top-secret reconnaissance and intelligence aircraft.
That's it.
So we help the guys on the ground accomplish their mission.
And you were at Bagram Air Force Base?
I was at Bagram. Our squadron is shutting down now and passing things back over to the Army, but we still work closely with them. It's a pretty integrated program.
And, Kristen, I believe you are flying the B-52?
That's right.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, it is just awesome. I just got back from a 6-month deployment to Guam, and we were doing Pacific power projection missions. So we were just preserving the peace out there and deterring aggression by doing what we do every day, just going out there and flying and just remaining ever vigilant through our training of releasing full loads of live munitions on target is more fun than I thought it could be. We've been practicing bombing this little island, Farallon de Mendanilla, that's uninhabited, and my mom's like, that little island never did anything to anybody, but we're decimating it every day.
And the B-52 is huge. Why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about how huge it is?
It is just a monstrosity to fly. It is 185 feet long, and the wings are back at a 45-degree angle. It's about 450,000 pounds when we take off, and you can just feel the weight of the aircraft. It's really just like controlling a monstrosity of fuel, metal, and bombs. It doesn't even feel like an aircraft sometimes.
This is an aircraft that's been in our arsenal for, 60 years almost now?
That's right. More than that.
We had I had the privilege, I guess, or the fear of flying in to landing zones that B-52s made out of the jungle, and sometimes our timing was a little bit off, and it got a little bit scary because we could see the bombs still coming down as we're getting too close. So
timing is everything.
Thank you for all the helicopter pilots, for all the B-52 pilots that were out there that made these instant landing zones. They were amazing.
And Kristen, the B-52 is now part of the Air Force Global Strike Command. Do I have that right?
That's right.
And how big's the crew that flies that huge plane?
A 5-person crew. Aircraft commander, that's me, the co-pilot, a radar navigator, and a navigator, which are really weapons specialists. And then we have an electronic warfare officer to help us defend the jet. And working together with the crew to solve emerging problems is the ultimate way to meet commander's intent. I love working with a crew.
That's excellent. Major, when you flew the C-130, where did that take you?
Most of our missions then were going through IUD over in Qatar. A lot of that C-130 unit has now moved over to Bagram, so it was really nice when I switched aircraft to see the old crew guys from the C-130. And like she was saying, working with crew aircraft, I know you'll probably talk to the fighter pilot after this, and she'll say how great it was to fly solo. But having a crew of guys to lean on and get the mission accomplished, it's pretty much indescribable. You've got some of these 18, 19-year-old guys in the back of the aircraft that I fly now, the MC-12, and they're running things way more complicated than I had. You know, 18, 19, I'm just trying to get through the academy and finish my classes. And these guys are identifying things through high-tech equipment and calling in the big guns and taking care of business on the ground. So I'm impressed by my crew every day.
And, Michelle, you flew a number of combat missions, I believe.
I did. I can't even keep it all straight. I knew you might ask, so I was trying to remember. I think it's about 168, maybe 170 over Afghanistan.
And this is a question for both of you. I'll start with the captain, though. Maybe you want to can tell us what you think your most interesting mission is, however you might describe that.
Flying such a historic and enduring aircraft makes me proud to bring peace through nuclear deterrence. We just had a big nuclear generation, and I really appreciate being able to preserve peace just through deterrence.
And Michelle, what would you describe as your most interesting mission?
Well, I have to say one of the ones that stays in my heart, there's probably two, but one of them was, like I said, we work closely with the ground troops, and we do a pre-briefing with them, and we can communicate on the radios, and then they go out and do their mission, we support them, and then we finish. And during one particular hairy night, it was pretty dark, we fly over the mountains, and sometimes they have to stay out all night, and they'll take, I don't even know how they power it, I think it's somehow solar powered, but they'll take an iPad out there with some music. And just as we were about to start a mission, one of them plays Toby Keith over the radio so that all the air crews above them could hear. And it was pretty touching to hear the strength of the ground crews and how they were trying to encourage us as we're supporting them. And it was a pretty patriotic moment. And then I'd probably say a second one is we lost an air crew, unfortunately, about a year and a half ago now. And as we were shutting down our squadron at Bagram Air Base recently, we did one last roll call to the four members that were lost. And to be up there in the air and to hear their names, and one last time before the squadron shut down was very touching.
Well, we know this is this career both of you have chosen to serve your country in this way has taken you all over the world. You've touched on some of the places, but it's not an easy career either. Would either of you wish to talk about some of the challenges that you've faced?
Well, sure. I can start with that, Major, again. I face a lot of challenges that are aviation related and some that aren't. The Air Force has been such a blessing. They've sent us all over, you know, the Southeast Asia to work in Afghanistan, but I've also had the opportunity during graduate school to do some research and work with children in Africa. So I went to Ghana and Tanzania and also Nepal, and it was to study how they were learning English and then be able to take that research back to the Air Force. And some of the conditions that I saw in Africa were heartbreaking, but to be able to sit with the children and teach them just a little bit of English and about healthcare and clean water and dig some wells, all because I've been blessed by the Air Force and was able to give that back. So it's challenging, but we're doing the right thing. The Air Force is trying to reach out in every way that it can. So that's all I got.
It's a lot. Kristen, do you want to take a stab at it?
Yeah, I would just say it takes a really strong work ethic, and then just maybe the peer competition that you're going to go against in pilot training. You just have to keep going and then keep working together, and you got to trust but verify each other.
Well, I think one of the opportunities we have on Veterans Radio is to reach out and let folks like you who are doing great work pass it on to the next generation as to if there are kids out there, whether they be boys or girls, who are interested in some aspect of the career you've chosen, what words of advice would you pass along, Kristen?
I would say be confident and work hard. Just go for it, no matter what your background has been. I really think that cheerleading and gymnastics and excelling in school prepared me to be a pilot. So whatever your passion is can provide the skill set to succeed in flying. And I would say the Air Force Academy provides the highest likelihood of earning an Air Force pilot slot. So to get an appointment to the Air Force Academy, you must be well-rounded with high grades and high SAT scores, leadership activities, and play a varsity sport.
Michelle, you want to take a swing at that one?
Sure. I'd also say if the Air Force Academy isn't quite your thing, my younger brother is actually applying to ROTC at the University of Michigan right now. So we're helping him with some of those same things, being well-rounded. So community service work with the Fallen Wounded Soldiers Fund and singing in the choir and running track. But I would also say, just from my experience, is find a mentor. You find someone that has been doing what you are passionate about, and you ask questions. And if you can find one mentor, great. If you can find two, if you can find three, ask them, how did you get to where you are? For instance, your wife is one of my mentors, but General Fossone taught me what it's like to be a strong servant leader. I remember when I was graduating from the Air Force Academy, she carried my suitcases as a general, and I was a cadet. And I will never forget watching a general carry my things and thinking to myself, I want her to be my mentor, and I want to do that. I want to be a servant leader. So if you're listening and you have dreams, find someone who's gone before you and ask questions.
That's very nice of you, Michelle. We're very appreciative of having both of you on the show. We've come to the end of the first half hour, amazingly. I suspect that we need both of these women back, Dale, don't you?
I think so.
But we're glad to have you. We know it wasn't easy to get lined up in your schedules. Thank you for all the wisdom that you've passed along, and also thank you for the service that you're doing to our country. And with that, we'll move on to our news here at the bottom of the hour. And after our news, we'll come back and talk to Carrie Lorenz, who was a former F-14 Tomcat fighter pilot, who's been out now a while and has been recently authored a new book that we want to talk about, Fearless Leadership. I think you'll find it fascinating. Stay with us.
Living at American House is like being on a cruise ship, with all the lovely surroundings, the many, many activities, and the people to share with. It's so comfortable to be here. I feel safe. I don't have to shop. I don't have to cook. I don't have to clean up.
When you move into an American House senior living community, you open the door to a new world of possibilities. Our life enrichment directors are committed to enhancing the lives of residents every day. We look forward to finding out what interests you.
I just get dressed up and walk down to the dining room and enjoy my meals in the company of other people at my table.
For more moments made in American House, go to AmericanHouse.com. Again, that's AmericanHouse.com. Or watch us at YouTube.com/AmericanHouseLiving.
Living here has enriched my life. I'm Carol Huck, and I made in American House.
And we're back on Veterans Radio. Hope you enjoyed the first half hour where we got to talk to two Air Force pilots, which gives us our setup to talk to a Navy pilot. And Carrie Lorenz, say hello to Veterans Radio.
Hello. Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, we're thrilled to have you here. With me is Dale Throneberry.
Welcome, Carrie, to Veterans Radio. Have we talked to you in the past?
Yeah, we have. We talked maybe about a year ago about integration of women into ground forces.
There we go. See,
your memory was almost all there.
It was pretty good. It was pretty good. I know I've talked to this.
And I kept saying
before.
The book just came out, so you couldn't have talked to her about the book.
No, it was something else. Well, welcome back, Carrie. Thank you very much for agreeing to be on Veterans Radio again.
You bet. I'm happy to be here.
Well, we had a great discussion the first hour with first half hour with a major and captain who currently fly for the Air Force. And I think we want to start a little bit the same way with you, Carrie, because it's integrated throughout the book, Fearless Leadership, that we're going to talk about. And that is what motivated you to fly and what motivated you to serve?
Oh, well, it was interesting listening to their stories because I think I actually have a similar story as well. I was always really drawn to flying, similarly to the gals that you had on earlier. My dad was a Marine Corps aviator, and I come from a family that has a long line and a long history of service. So I was always drawn to flying, and in particular, naval aviation. And so it was interesting because I
when I went into flying, I didn't go into this or into naval aviation thinking about breaking down barriers or smashing through glass ceilings. I was really drawn to an organization that was intensely focused on mission before self. So it was something that I'd always wanted to do. I always wanted to serve my country. I took a little bit different path than they did. I did not go to one of the academies, nor was I in ROTC, but I went to the University of Wisconsin and graduated from there with a bachelor's degree with a double major actually in social work and psychology.
Sounds perfect for a pilot.
I know, it does, right? I went to the Aviation Officer Candidate School in Pensacola, Florida.
Before we get there, I think this is a element that both the captain and the major mentioned, and that is the role of sports and competitiveness in this type of career. And maybe you can talk a little bit about it. Again, it's in your book, Fearless Leadership, but maybe you can talk a little bit about what you brought to the table in terms of your sports experiences.
Right, that's a great point. So I grew up in Wisconsin, so I grew up playing hockey and volleyball and basketball throughout middle school, grade school, and high school. But then once I went to the University of Wisconsin, I was a varsity rower. So anybody who's familiar with that sport at all understands it's extraordinarily physically demanding, but it's also very psychologically demanding as well. And it has a very interesting play between having to be really, really tenacious and gritty and being able to gut your way through very, very painful training sessions and perform at a very individual level, but while you're also working as a great team member and a teammate. So I do think that really extraordinarily competitive level of athletic involvement really had set me up very well to be able to step into an environment where there were a lot of similarities, where you had to be able to work well as an individual, certainly, but you also had to be able to function very well within a team in order to get the job done.
And you graduated from the University of Wisconsin when?
In 1990. So then I went off to Aviation Officer Candidate School in 1991. And what is a little interesting, because this was in the era, as you both probably remember, definitely before the full 24-hour news cycle, where it's any channel all the time. You know, you kind of had the three major channels. CNN was just coming on. And really, for the 2 years that I was buried in flight school, busy studying and flying and doing everything that you have to do in that, we didn't have a whole lot of time to follow the news, but I was aware that there was this conversation happening about women in combat and whether or not the country was ready for female aviators and certainly not female fighter pilots, and so that there was a lot of back and forth going on during my time. It was an interesting time to be a part of the military, for sure.
And certainly in your leadership book, it discusses some of those times and the challenges that you faced. How did those challenges sort of shape your view of leadership?
Well, it's interesting. I think right now we have there's such a sense of immediacy in everything that so many people do, that we think that we need to accomplish things right away. We feel like it's a very almost self-centered kind of myopic view sometimes. When I started flying, I certainly was aware of the fact that women had been flying military aircraft since 1942, right? The WASP. The women service air force pilots ferried tens of thousands of airplanes all over the U.S. and Canada and overseas in the 40s. But they were really limited to those non-combatant roles. So it's the early 90s. There's still this discussion of, can women be successful? What are we going to do about this? Can we handle prisoners of war or everything else? And there was a lot of resistance, a lot of barriers to success. And so one of the things that I really found and I certainly address in my book, is this idea of what is it going to take to really step into a role? What about your mindsets and your beliefs, and how do you challenge things that you're afraid of when so many people are telling you, we're not ready for this yet, we don't have your kind here, or why would you ever want to do that? You know, we haven't done this before. One of the things that my dad always used to say to me, and interesting that the women before me both mentioned their dads being really strong role models as well. My dad used to always say to me that the ones who say you can't and you won't are probably the ones that scared that you will. So just go for it.
Well,
and that's actually, yeah, that's really sound advice.
And again, I think, one of these things we hear over and over in talking to veterans who have had these amazing careers, and part of that is you sort of have to break through what you're afraid of doing and try it. But let me go back to when you were finishing up, you got your wings, got out of pilot school.
Mm-hmm.
What airframe options were available to you? And let's talk a little bit about the F-14 Tomcat that you ended up in.
Okay, well, when I got winged, ironically enough, just a couple of months before that happened, I was on a normal path, just like a regular guy going through flight school. And just a couple of months shy of completing that, which is almost a two-year program, because there were no strike fighters available to women, they hadn't opened up women in combat yet, I was actually pulled aside and told, hey, since they haven't opened up women in combat yet, we're going to give you two options. You can either get out of the Navy and not owe any time, or you can simply go to a non-flying job, which, as you can imagine, as a student naval aviator, is devastating when that's everything you've been working towards, that's what you've been dreaming. And so I asked for a little bit of time and, came back and said, hey, I don't want to get out of the Navy. I don't want to go to a non-flying job. We need to find a third way. And that, of course, is not usually how those conversations go when you're talking to someone who is senior to you. But they went in and they took a look at some of the records and came back and actually offered me a slot to stay on as an instructor pilot. So in the couple of months that I thought I had before I got winged, where I thought I was going to stay on as an instructor pilot down at the training command in Kingsville, Texas, I just showed up every day. I worked as though I were going to the fleet, out to a combat aircraft, just like my squadron mates and my classmates. And, about a month later, at the very end of April in 1993, is when the policy ban was finally lifted by, the then Secretary of Defense, Les Aspirin. And, what happened was they lifted the exclusion clause or the ban on women in combat aircraft. So what ended up happening was then I was able to literally that day fill out my dream sheet and put down what I wanted to fly and which coast and all that. So I ended up just about 2 months later getting winged, earning my wings of gold, and I was assigned the F-14 Tomcat, and I got to go out to Miramar, California and fly that. So it's a pretty amazing experience. The Tomcat was, unfortunately, it's since been retired, but it was definitely a premier fighter at the time. And if you've seen Top Gun, then you've seen the airplane.
Oh, hasn't everybody.
I know. No, you know what? Actually, no. You would be surprised how many people who are younger than us I've not seen that movie yet. And well, I always try to tell people, I say, hey, you know, it's on a continuous loop, usually on TNT on Saturdays.
Yeah, you can always find it somewhere. So let me ask you, was the F-14 assignment a coveted assignment at the time that you were getting your wings?
Absolutely. The F-14 and the F-18 both. The F-14 was one of the most difficult airplanes to land on the aircraft carrier. So it was... Normally, the people that got assigned to fly the F-14 would be the ones who had very, very good boat landing grades in the training command, because it was such a beast to get aboard. Not to get too technical, because, you know, I'm sure the gals before me and you all as rocket scientists and such, it comes aboard the ship on a really, really delicate or sensitive part of the power band. So you don't have, you're in a bad position every time you come aboard. You just don't have, you can go into full afterburner And if you get a little low, get a little slow, it can get dangerous and get sketchy really, really quickly. So it was a pretty sporty airplane, needless to say, to fly on and off the aircraft carrier, but fun.
And you served until, I believe, 1999?
Correct. Right. Yeah, I got out in 99. And since then, you know, I have kids. I've got four kids. So I had my first two when I was in the service, had my second daughter just as I was getting out, and just kind of made that transition of essentially going from Mach 2 to preschool to now I do. I know.
From Mach 2 to the terrible twos.
Okay, which is faster.
That's right.
Well, let me. Yeah, we're going to move into talking about what you're doing in the leadership category and your new book that's out right after we hear from one of our sponsors.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
And welcome back to Veterans Radio. Talking with Carrie Lorenz. I'm Jim Fosso, and I'm with Dale Thronberry.
Hello. I'm still here. I'm fascinated by these stories. I'm always amazed that, you know, that... You know, these jet pilots that fly at 800 miles an hour or whatever it is, and, you know, I could go 120 miles an hour, but I could go backwards.
That's the difference. That's the difference. So, Carrie, you got out in 99. You're raising your children. What moved you into the consulting and motivational speaking and now the writing arena?
Well, it's been interesting, as we were just kind of joking about, going from that big transition from Mach 2 to the terrible 2s to preschool, and then now where I am today. It's been pretty fascinating and an interesting path that in the years that I've left the Navy, since I've left the Navy, and I've been working as a leadership consultant, and I do a bit of strategic planning and a lot of keynote speaking. One of the things that I was really struck by and what really inspired me or motivated to write this book are really the parallels between the world of naval aviation and the world of business and working with really high-achieving, high-performing business people, and that in both of those situations, whether it's working in the world of naval aviation or in high-performance business, that leaders are having to perform in really highly complex and very high-pressure environments where everything is constantly changing and you clearly don't have perfect information. And now that I have the benefit of a few more years under my belt, being able to pull a lot of these different things together and understanding what those parallels were, for me, it became really clear that no matter what realm you work in or what spectrum, whether it's in the military, whether you work for an association, a heat treating facility, or for a Fortune 10 company, that any high-performing team is going to require high-performing leaders. So what I tried to do is really pull together these different ideas of what it's going to take on a really individual level and understanding what that mindset is to, you know, courage and integrity and working with tenacity and persistence to what does that look like once you move from a more individual level to fearless leadership in action. So how do you really get your team aligned? How do you get people to understand your mission and work with purpose, and then developing that culture where everybody works really well together, and how do you execute? And then I kind of wrap it all up with the idea of resilience and what happens when things don't go the way that you expected them to go. We're working in such a challenging environment right now that I think all of those skill sets are so necessary, and yet the biggest thing that I always see is that people stop themselves before the environment stops them. And what I mean by that is that, you know, we need to be able to take on board the fact that it's our own personal mindsets and how we approach a situation that will determine whether or not, how we challenge, how we confront our fears, whether or not we're going to be successful. And that, you know what, you just got to summon up the courage, feel the fear, and do it anyway.
Well, I think one of the statements that I underlined on page 257 of your book in the Be Fearless chapter, the conclusion was, quote, most people give up too soon when pursuing chasing their dreams. Fearless leadership doesn't develop in an instant. It develops over the course of time, close quote. And I think that's what you're saying is you can't, it's a long process, isn't it?
That's right, it is. And yet, there is no magical pill. There's no magical formula. But there are certain things that you can do and that if you are aware of, that will make you go along that journey faster and be more successful. And oftentimes, though, what people don't understand, and I've got a friend of mine who's a Blue Angel who I actually talked to about this book, that they don't understand the actual work that it's going to take. And I'm sure, you know, you both have heard this as well. I like to say sometimes, if I had a nickel for every time somebody said to me, you're so lucky that, and then insert whatever. You know, you're so lucky you got to fire. You're so lucky you wrote a book, or you're so lucky. And all I can think of is, you know, no, it's a matter of duct taping your butt to the chair and doing the work. But that's not fun.
No, that's not the part they show on Top Gun at all. one of the things I found interesting in your book was that you identified, and it's a great read, folks, and we're going to tell you how to get it in a moment, but in your Fundamentals of Fearless Leadership, you identified as courage, tenacity, and integrity. And, and I don't think, I've read a lot of management books over the years. I don't ever think I've seen somebody lay it out as courage, tenacity, and integrity. And maybe you can comment where that comes from and why you see those as the first three most important elements.
Well, thank you, I think. And I think you're right. I don't know that anybody else has. Well, I kind of look at those three things as being, you need to have the courage to get started, to break through those fears. And no matter how much you're afraid, how uncomfortable you may be, get comfortable being uncomfortable. And the courage is what is going to get you going. But the tenacity is what is going to start getting you across that finish line. And the fact that most people, again, it goes back to this idea that people don't oftentimes understand when they say they want something or they really wish they could only, you know, dot, 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 is how gritty, how persistent, how tenacious you need to be. And in that is this idea of commitment. And it's that combination of desire and discipline and that vulnerability that's really inherent in admitting that you want something and the belief that it's worth working towards. And that's what we need to have, that commitment, that tenacity. You know, I think I said in there, courage is the 20-second sprint. Tenacity is the 5-hour marathon, ironically enough, since they're running the New York Marathon today. But I think that that's what you'll find with a lot of veterans, whether it's paratroopers, snipers, SEALs, special ops forces, aviators, whoever that may be, guys and gals who are going out there day after day, day in and day out. The tenacity, the ability to stick with it when things are hard, long after the glamorous part is done. And when you start wrapping all of that up and you throw some solid amounts of integrity in there, making the hard calls, doing what is right, then you have a really good foundation to start building your team. And I think we don't talk about that enough. We don't talk about the courage and the tenacity part. We just go right into, I just need to start executing. I don't have time for the rest of this. I don't have time for learning or for practicing. I just want to go out and do. But that doesn't usually end up very successfully.
And I do think some of that, those three values are, inbred into us in military training. And I suspect it's military families who talk about things like tenacity and integrity. I don't know that there's a lot of that discussion around the table unless you have had some of that upbringing. So, I think your framing of the fundamentals of fearless leadership is very interesting, and I certainly really enjoyed the read. But let's talk about the book just came out, I believe, right?
It did. It came out second week of October.
So this is are you making a lot of book tour stops at this point? Or are you getting the word out?
I'm not doing a lot of book tour stops yet. No, I'm not. But I am doing quite a bit of speaking, and it made the Wall Street Journal bestseller list already, so that's fantastic. It's being very, very well received, and it's getting out there. So I'm excited about it.
The publisher is Greenleaf Book Group and Press out of Austin, Texas.
Yes.
And where can we find a copy of Fearless Leadership High Performance Lessons from the Flight Deck?
You can either get it from Amazon. It's in some Barnes & Nobles, not every single Barnes & Nobles, but they definitely have it online. Or you can order it from 800 CEO Reads or Books A Million. So, and I think it should be out on iBooks. If it's not out this week, it should be out within the next week or so. And on Kindle as well, obviously.
So when you first sat down and you had a blank page and somebody had talked you into writing a book and you had to start with the first blank screen, now what do I do now? How frightening was that to fill up, get your thoughts down and turn it into a real book that's now available in all those places?
Okay, transparently enough, it was terrying. I'm kind of old school too. The blank page on a computer screen, to me, it's the most creative sucking mechanism that there is. So I actually did probably a third of it typing into my laptop or desktop, probably a third of it just longhand on legal notebooks with, you know, I had 11, 12 legal pads all stacked up where when I was traveling, I would write longhand. And I actually did some dictation software when I couldn't figure out certain stories that I wanted to tell because I didn't use a ghostwriter. I wanted it to be as though if after you heard this interview, you went out and picked up the book, you started reading it, and you're like, oh, my gosh, it feels like she's sitting right across the table from me. So it's intimidating. I know some of my audience definitely very, very well read, very articulate, and it is not what I call a naval war college tome where it has 9 syllable words where some fancy schmancy vocabulary in it. I just wanted it to be really interesting and relatable and hopefully really helpful.
Well, I think
it was intimidating.
I think you achieved all your goals in this book. As I said, it's a great read. The quotes you have from other folks are put into the right spot. The amount of military experiences in there, I think, were really helpful. Gary, if people want to know more about you or get in touch with you relative to some of the keynote speaking you do and leadership training you do, do you have a website that they can go find you at?
I do. It is carrielorenz.com. So that's just CareyLorenz.com. And I'm on Twitter and Facebook, LinkedIn. I'm pretty easy to find.
And if you Google her, you'll find all kinds of stories. We didn't have time maybe to get into some of the more controversial things, but we didn't want to either. So there. Right, Dale?
That's right. That's our choice. We are the hosts. It's our program. We can do what we want.
So we're really thrilled with having you on. I do want to we hear this all the time, and as we sneak up on Veterans Day, let me get this out of the dedication from the book, Fearless Leadership. Quote, a veteran is someone who at one point in his or her life wrote a blank check payable to the United States of America for an amount of up to and including my life, close quote. I think it's great you put that in there, Kerry, in your dedication, along with the dedication to the kids. We wish you the best in the book, and thank you for being a guest on Veterans Radio.
Thank you, and thanks for having me.
And,
thank
folks,
you.
That brings us to the end of our program next week.
Next week's our party. Happy birthday, Veterans Radio, 11 years. Join us here on Wham! Talk 1600.
And we're thrilled to have you along. If you want to call in and tell us what Veterans Day means to you, again, call 248-380-0000, extension 222, and leave us a nice message. And with that, to all of our friends, you are dismissed.